Welcome to episode one of Taking the Charge podcast from rainy Regensburg, Germany. I'm David Hein of Hein News, and with me for my adventure here is Oz Davis. Oz?
Yes, from sunny but cool Budapest.
Man, sunny.
How are you all doing today? Good morning.
I'm sure everybody's doing great. Looking forward to the basketball season really throughout the world. Their own basketball season starting up just as we are. We have a great show for you today. We have a special guest from Germany who also talk a little bit about the EuroLeague and German Beko BBL CEO Jan Palmer. We'll also get to a couple of your emails from our previous talk, and then basically just see what else we have to talk about, and then we'll say goodbye, and we'll have our next chat next week. So Oz, how are we doing?
Yes.
How are we doing this morning? How are we doing without basketball?
How are you doing about basketball? Well, luckily, I'm an American football fan as well, so I have my methadone in place. But it's really amazing. You go through the EuroLeague season, and the drama heightens and heightens and heightens. And you know, again, this is the difference between European basketball and American basketball: is every game matters. You go through and things get tenser and tenser and tenser, and then it's over, and then you have national team competition, and you just wonder when it's ever going to end, and then it ends, and you say, what's next?
Yeah.
It's that Sunday football feeling in February when you're so used to having basketball constantly on the computer and constantly on the TV, and then there's nothing. So how much, especially since there's no more, not much more happening in the transactions market in the NBA or EuroLeague. So not much to do now except twiddle thumbs and wait for the exhibition tournaments that will be opening next week.
Yeah, I mean we've had some tournaments here and there, some friendly games, but I think now the tournaments are starting up now more so. So,
yeah, well, the rosters are full now, so now it's proper tournaments.
Exactly, and you know, this is when the fun starts. You know, people start
saying, oh, yeah.
Okay, well, you know, what does my team look like without my, you know, with a new coach and all this other stuff? And
then the speculation begins.
Exactly. what's that injury gonna? How's that injury gonna do? Is he gonna be able to play or not?
So, you almost wish exhibition games in the NBA were a bit more meaningful. Again, just like the regular season, these exhibition games in Europe just seem to mean so much more in terms of measuring stick, in terms of generating enthusiasm for the season, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A lot more so than even in summer league in the NBA. I almost wish that, you know, the exhibition games were a bit more important in the NBA, because this is an exciting time. This is an exciting time. Not right now, but say next week, beginning next week.
This is also goes to the number of games in general. I mean, you just have fewer games in Europe in the individual leagues that it, you know, it does mean more. Every game means that much more. You know, you have the huge amount of, 82 game schedule in the NBA, and the individual game itself just means a little bit less. So,
but also, to be fair, and I always point this out, to American fans, is that, you know, some of these teams do play 75-80 games. I mean, if you're playing VTB League, you're playing EuroLeague, you're playing your domestic league, you got cup tournament in there somewhere in January or whatever, I mean, you are playing a lot of games. And again, every game counts. Maybe not if you're middle of the pack in Spain towards the end of the season. You might have a couple of off games, but I mean, basically every game counts. You're either fighting relegation, you want to increase your standing. The prestige of reaching the top 16 in EuroLeague or the top 8 in EuroLeague is so much higher than reaching a final 8 in the NBA. Yeah, okay, in the NBA, a lot of teams, their goal is make the playoffs. But in EuroLeague, I mean, every spot counts in that bracket. Every spot counts. You'd much rather finish 6th than 8th, you know, in terms of just prestige and honor and things like that. So again, you know, every game counts, including the preseason.
And that's where we're at now. So let's talk a little bit. We had a couple of people contacted us about a talk we had last week. We were talking about the Eurobasket 2013 qualifiers, mm-hmm. and addressed Portugal. And Luis from Portugal wrote in, "The problem with Portugal is not a FIBA's problem. Portugal made Eurobasket in 2007 with a ninth place finish and reached Eurobasket 2011 with some of the players of that generation. But Portugal doesn't have teams in the European level. But Portugal doesn't have teams playing in the European level. Not players either. So it's an internal investment problem with less quality players and less teams." And he mentions that Porto even closed their professional team this summer. The Portugal national team faced the Eurobasket qualifiers with a lot of unemployed players. And will need to raise their formation levels. But it's also fair to say that the group Portugal was in was one of the most problematic of the qualification, with Turkey, Italy, Czech Republic. Obviously, that wasn't easy. I do think this new form of qualification is better. These teams and players need to play more, but each team should be obliged to have at least one team in European competitions.
Oh, that's a decent benchmark.
Yeah, I think it's a good. I mean, I don't know if the champions Benfica were invited. I imagine they probably were invited to the Euro Challenge, but they're definitely not in the Euro Challenge. And I think that any time you have a team, you know, playing at the European competition, you know, we were talking about this last week. If you have them playing against topper level teams, you're going to get better, and that's the same thing at the club level. If you, even at Euro Challenge, you're still playing against high quality teams. So it's.
But this is a question you asked. What I'm doing with no basketball on? What I've been doing a lot is following the elections in the U.S. and in some other countries. And I'll tell you what, this is almost like a liberal conservative question. It's like, how much help should FIBA give to a program like Portugal? Who, you know, and Portugal is not an Italy that can bounce back, that has the resources to bounce back. The reader is correct here. So how much is FIBA indebted to, you know, helping out that program? And I mean, especially since it looks like FIBA is playing favorites a little bit right now. You know, they're playing a little bit favorites with Germany. They're playing favorites with Britain. You know, they're helping these teams out. They're giving recommendations for how to improve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, where is that support in Portugal? I mean, is it a chicken and egg thing? First, it's a catch-22 thing. First, you got to have a European team, but then, you know, we're not going to give you a European team until you compete at, you know, on the FIBA level or whatever. I mean, you're just going to put them into this situation. So. It's a question. Now the conservative, of course, would say that Portuguese basketball is responsible for itself. You know, that they need to find these endorsers, they need to find the coaches and whatnot. But still, on the other hand, FIBA is not reticent to help out fledgling programs. They're not. So, I mean, shouldn't they address the Portuguese situation when one of the top two sporting clubs in the country folds their basketball team? I mean, weren't these guys in the championship last year in Portugal? Porto? I believe they were. They're a perpetual championship level team.
Yeah, they were in the final.
Yeah, and it's like, shouldn't somebody be addressing this, particularly since, you know, Portugal is one of those 25, 30 teams that's in the running for these 24-team tournaments? I mean, shouldn't something be done? So it's a tough question. I mean, you know, Portugal is obviously not known as a great basketball nation, but it is a basketball nation. So I feel like FIBA could help out a little bit here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's something that definitely should be addressed in some manner, at least, you know, if not, you know, publicly, definitely internally. I can't say whether or not they are. That when you do have a team of that size, I mean, obviously there's a football side to it as well, a soccer side to it as well.
And the football team has been doing marvelously in Europe.
Sure,
lately.
It's a former European Cup champion.
Yeah.
But you know, it makes you wonder a little bit why why Benfica though didn't decide to play in the Euro Challenge if they had the choice. But
well, I mean, this has been on vogue lately. You know, these teams saying, you know, we can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know, the only team that poo-poos these European competitions is Spain. You know, Spain habitually will say, oh, Euro Challenge, nah, we're not going to play that. That's small potatoes. But everybody else, of course, they would grab that opportunity. But lately, they've been saying too expensive.
Yeah. Also with traveling, I mean, if you're playing against some Russian team, you know, if Vladivostok's there, I mean, you're basically going to Asia, and then if you have an Israeli team, then you're going to Israel. You know, it's not like, you know, you're just going to the Netherlands or you're just going to Italy.
Yeah, yeah. It's there was a very good piece that Ball in Europe ran from a guy that works with Turkish Eurosport, Ugyar Kuratsa, I believe his name is pronounced. And he did a very good piece, and he was talking about the Euro Challenge curse, which is basically, look, there's only one way to win Euro Challenge, and that is to bankrupt your team. I mean, now, it's not always the case. One of the Russian teams, maybe even Khimki, has seen success, and the guinea pig this year is Besiktas, right? They're the Euro Challenge champions, but basically that's the pattern. These teams, they go and they plunk down, they run up these huge debts, which is what, you know, fair play is ostensibly about. They run up these huge debts, take the title, and then within a couple of years, they're in Division II in their country. The Euro Challenge is not that old a competition. I believe it's only like 10 years old now.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And one wonders about the long-term success of this tournament. You know, a lot of these are teams that few people in Europe know about or care about. I mean, you know, the Kievs of the world in teams like this. And you wonder about the viability of this program if you're just going to bankrupt teams. You're just going to bankrupt the teams that should be moving up to the next level. You know, so the Euro Challenge is a bit problematic. One wonders if FIBA just shouldn't have gotten out of the club game when they lost the EuroLeague ownership rights, or they had that EuroLeague problem.
And the
disillusion.
And then there's also the connection with EuroCup, how they, you know, how the losers of the EuroCup qualifiers go into the Euro Challenge and.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it's almost like EuroCup should be 40 teams or whatever, and you know, just put these teams on the level. I think it's interesting that EuroLeague will reject a team from, or even EuroCup will reject a team from Turkey or Croatia or whatever because their stadium is too small. But they're totally willing, on the other hand, to, you know, bankrupt one of these smaller clubs. You know, they're totally willing to do that for I can't see a huge profit coming out of FIBA Euro Challenge. I mean, I don't understand the thinking on some levels. I mean, yes, prestige is good. That's always the argument for expanding these tournaments, for making more tournaments. But how much prestige does Euro Challenge bring, you know, against medium to long-term growth? You know, it's a salient question. And the fact that here's an opportunity for a Portuguese club, for Portuguese players to enhance their skills, to test themselves against European competition, and they can't afford it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's like the carrot on the stick. You're dangling this tantalizing promise that even if they achieve, they can't fulfill. You know, they can't afford it. Point is, and so one wonders about the whole good of the Euro Challenge sometimes.
I mean, I think probably my nickname over the next few months or whatever probably become Development Dave. I mean, because obviously we said, you know, it's good, you know, with the Eurobasket, it's good that these teams get the chance to play. And in that regard, it's also, I mean, okay, if you're going to have the competition, if you're going to have a third level of the competition, it is a good chance, just look, for example, the champions from the Austrian league, you know, they're playing in this competition, you know, for and some of the other teams that are playing in the competition, you know, I mean, Romanian teams, Cyprus teams, you know, the second, third teams in Finland and Sweden, you know, it's a chance for them to also get in there, you know, and I think it's also a chance for even the bigger teams, teams from the bigger nations. It does give them a little bit of a draw to get players, because they are at least playing internationally, which gives them, the players, then the chance to be seen. I mean, you're still going to be seen if you play this competition, you know. I mean,
yeah,
when you see a team like Nancy playing in the Euro Challenge, I mean, they were bordering. Well, I mean, last year obviously was a little bit different because they had Batum, but Nicolas Batum. But you know, you see a team like Nancy come and say, okay, we'll do the Euro Challenge. You know, it's still a chance for them to play internationally. It's still a chance for them to have that draw, because there is a draw to play internationally, because it's you know, there's so many ways to move up as a player, that you know, if you're seen in one of these competitions, you know, they'll be like, oh, okay, well, you know what, I saw him play against us, and you know, he scored 25 against us. Next year, that you know, they'll be like, well, why don't we go get that guy who scored 25 against us in the Euro Challenge? You know.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at the transfers today from EuroLeague, and you see this system. You know, the Euro Cup teams grab the Euro Challenge guys. The second tier EuroLeague teams grab the Euro Cup guys. The first tier EuroLeague teams grab the second tier EuroLeague teams guys. I mean, you see this all. There's this definite hierarchical structure. However, can't we ease the financial burden of Portugal going to Belarus? Now, what I think is, Development Dave, here's an idea you can run with. I think, given the financial situation and given the incredible continuing Balkanization of Europe, I think the secret is regional leagues.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, VTB United, yeah, that's backed up by a lot of money. And at this point, the third, fourth year in the league, they're saying, forget geography. You know, we'll take Israel, we'll take Finland, we'll take teams from these countries. And call them, you know, former Soviet Union or whatever. I think that this would be a decent solution. You could have your Western European division with Portuguese, Spanish, French teams that don't make the other competitions. You know, stuff like this. Travel is less expensive, and then you have a tier structure. I mean, after that, you take your eight regional winners or whatever, and just play one. You know, eight team round robin thing with a tournament. I mean, why not? Save money, and there's a definite, you know, flow there. Yeah, okay, you're drawing 200 fans in Belarus, but then all of a sudden you're in a knockout situation, you're going to draw a few more.
Yep.
You know?
Plus your fans won't have to travel as far either, so.
Right. I mean, you're a hardcore Portuguese basketball fan. Yeah, you'll take a bus to Sevilla. Sure, why not?
Yeah, sure.
Why not? I mean, you'll take a cheap flight, come back that night, or come back the next morning. Why not?
Man,
and you know, again, it's still international play, but it looks more organized and it's cheaper.
And then also, I mean, you might find you know, corporations come, you know, that the Spanish say,
yeah,
okay, well, we'll give you some Spanish coaches and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, advertisers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
advertising
these,
as well. I
these,
mean, you
these
know,
big
you
businesses
have your dates. and you're just could say, okay, well, I'm going to do, you know, I mean, we know that we're going to play against, you know, this Spanish border team. You know, we're sticking on Portugal. This is the Portugal podcast portion of the show.
Yeah.
that, you know, yeah, we're going to play this border town team and everybody come out and support them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, big businesses are thinking regionally. You know, big businesses will say, okay, we're going to market this product in Poland, Czech Republic, and Hungary. Okay. So why doesn't, you know, international basketball think a bit more like this? You know, I mean, we have, as far as international sport is concerned, there are two levels of regions. You know, there's the country, and then there's the world, or the continent, and then the world, right? Yeah. I mean, why isn't there something in between? I mean, VTB United, when that thing first came out, they had the right idea. Yeah, let's take all the powerhouse teams from the former Soviet Union that have this rivalry going back to the 30s in some cases, if you're talking like Žalgiris and CSKA Moscow, you know, let's enhance these rivalries except under free market conditions.
Well, I mean,
and it's a great league.
Yeah, I mean, and you have it elsewhere as well. I mean, you have the Adriatic League, and you also have
the Adriatic League has been successful since the dissolution of Yugoslavia. I mean, the Adriatic League. Okay, some of the individual clubs have financial problems, but the league itself, I think, is a success. You know, so then and they've had some exciting tournaments in the past few years. Hell, they gave us Adam Morrison's brief comeback. I mean, it's a fantastic league. I mean, a team like Red Star Belgrade is financially thriving, in part due to Adriatic League. You know, that team was on the danger of disappearing into irrelevance in the early part of this decade or last decade, and you know, now they're like doing well. They have like international presence on the market and stuff. So.
And then the Baltic League as well, you know, with the Latvians and Lithuanians and Estonians.
Yeah. Baltic League games sell out almost every game. Of course, those are, you know, great basketball culture.
I was going to say, I mean, I think you and me playing one-on-one would sell out in Lithuania.
Full attendance, 4,000 for the Dave versus Davis basketball game.
Yes. Man, taking the charges, coming up with these ideas. Everybody should listen, Ryan. Are they not listening? You know, are they not? And they're not listening to the podcast, right? Last week we said get rid of the second round. This week we're saying do these regional.
Oh, these things take time, Dave. Yes. These things take time.
Exactly.
You know?
All right.
2020.
All right.
That's the benchmark, right?
Exactly. 2020. We'll come back to that 2020 in a moment.
Yep.
So this ends the Portugal portion of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Move over to Montenegro. We had a message from a person who calls himself Nine ER.
Niner.
Yeah. It was basically just because we had mentioned we were talking about how the Montenegro is, you know. They were really strong in the qualifiers, and then they're also going to be getting in Nikola Pekovic and Nikola Vucevic, both NBA centers, and then and the Niner came in and mentioned that Spanish nationalized Nikola Mirotic plays for Real Madrid, actually born in Podgorica in Montenegro, that he was, that there's been rumblings from him that he would maybe rather play for Montenegro, that the fact that the Spanish Federation teams are only allowed to have one naturalized player, that the Spanish obviously decided on Serge Ibaka, and that Mirotic, despite being only like 21, basically has very little chance of making it into that team, unless FIBA then decide to change their regulations on number of foreigners, foreign-born players. But,
which won't happen.
Which I don't think will happen.
I mean, at the last Eurobasket, one of the most popular, aside from. Probably the most popular topic was, wow, Lithuania is an awesome country. But the second most popular topic was this question was, what about Bo McCaleb? You know, what about these guys who have never set foot in this country and playing with the team? If you went to two, there would be revolution.
Exactly. So that's and obviously Meritage knows the system and knows. Mm-hmm.
And knows that Ibaka is going to be dominating with the Thunder for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and probably also with Spain. You know what I mean? He gives them an inside force that defensively, definitely, that very few have. So it's, he basically, according to some reports that Niner sent through, basically said that the Meritage team has contacted FIBA and that I guess they has to submit a request in writing to get the permission to then play for Montenegro.
Wow, that far along even?
Well, Meritage actually played for Spain, the U-20 team, last summer and won gold for them as the top scorer and second leading rebounder.
Yes.
This
was a big question. People forget. This was a big question. I mean, whether to go Meritage or Ibaka.
Yeah, that's true.
Nobody... No, you can't question the fact that Ibaka led the NBA in blocks, okay? Right, you put this on the table, but Meritage is a product in training. I mean, you know, he went out of his way to get with Spain, you know, on the hopes that he would win golds, you know? And now all of a sudden, you know, they have this natural force of destruction. You know, it's like you can't pass on Ibaka, but jeez. I mean, it's tough to let Meritage fall by the wayside.
Definitely, and I mean, it's
and then you got Montenegro,
and then
for
whom the, and then we
the
go
future
back.
Is now so bright they're wearing their double UV sunglasses. I mean, wow! You're gonna, but I mean, this team is an all-star team.
Hey, so you want to go with those bigs again?
Oh, jeez!
So we got Pekovic, Vucevic, Vladimir Dazic. Bojan Doblevic, and then you also even have Blagoda Sekulic and Vladimir Dragicevic. And then, well, let's put in Meritage as well.
Yeah, right. And then, oh, wait, we need a backcourt too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But that's so much talent. My God, if they could develop their Juan Carlos Navarro, you know, that's Team Spain. Yeah, that's, I mean, wow, what a nice roster, especially in the short term. I mean, if this happens, if the Meritage moves happens before 12, wow. They could even afford to lose one of those guys and still be okay.
Yeah, definitely. So that's our email portion. Thank you, everybody, for the messages. Definitely keep writing in. We love to hear from you. We love to know that you guys are listening and interested in what we're talking about. It's definitely wonderful to hear input from other nations. You know, I mean, obviously, Oz and I are huge basketball fans and do everything we can to follow it the best we can. But obviously, you know, there's places that we just have no idea. You know, first of all, we don't understand language, and so we can't get very much of the information. But just you guys are so much closer to it that we love to hear anything from you guys, and you know that. I mean, you can definitely rest assured that your input, your opinions will be read, discussed here, because this is an interactive show that we want to have talk to anybody.
You really can't cover it all. And through the years, the readers of Ball in Europe have been totally important to providing information, to, you know, proper critiques, you know, opinions on players, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we're covering what, 400 pro level teams here?
Yeah.
Not to mention youth ball, international ball, coaching staffs. So yes, we like the input. We like the information. Listen to our podcast. Write us.
Yes, write us. Well, how to get a hold of us? We'll let you know later. So definitely don't worry about that. Okay, Oz. Let's move over into the next section of our show. I had a chance. The German league announced on Tuesday that the 2013 All-Star Game, All-Star Day, will take place in Nuremberg, and I had the chance to go up there and talk to the German Beko BBL CEO, Jan Pommer. I talked to him about a couple of the big issues going on right now. This is the interview with him, and hope you like it. We'll be back once the interview's over to talk about it, talk about some of the things that he addressed, and where the situations are heading. So enjoy this one. Again, this is the German Beko BBL League CEO Jan Pommer. So Jan Pommer, welcome to the show. Just wanted to catch up with you a little bit about some issues going on in Germany and Germany outside the borders as well. You are part of the board for the financial fair play with the EuroLeague. Was just wondering if you can maybe give us a little bit update on what the status is of the financial fair play with the EuroLeague.
Well, financial fair play is the rule now, and we are starting to assess the club's budgets and the club's balance sheets with the next season. And so I think we've been very, very quick in this, and I'm really looking forward to learn more about how the clubs really do their business, because I think they're just as in soccer, there are many, many questions we have to face.
We're just coming out of the off season now. Season leagues are starting up. When does EuroLeague start looking at what the clubs have done, and what do they do with that data at this moment?
Well, the first season is basically a season to try it out for everybody and to see how the system actually works. Just like UEFA did it, that they had a couple of years where they basically took a look at it without any severe measures against it or any penalties, and now they have the first penalties. That's the way we want to do it as well. So during the season we will have the first balance sheets and the first financial information, and then we will go on from there.
Have you been able to kind of get a picture at all, just looking at the transfers and looking at the names that come in and going, of what it looks like yet, or is it just way too early?
I think it's too early to assess that, but my impression is that it's not as bad in the EuroLeague as it could have been regarding the financial overall situation in Europe and with all the financial crisis. So I think most of the clubs are still pretty stable, and this is of course good news.
One of the big goals of the German league is to be the top league in Europe by 2020. The BBL just signed a new television contract with Sport 1 and Kabel 1. I think it's over 3 years. That was a big step, a big part of the plan of the idea to have a strong television process. Talk about the 2020 goal. Obviously, there's a big a major issue is also that German clubs have success internationally. Talk about where you see the league right now with 2020 in mind, and maybe what the next step is going forward.
Well, our big aim is indeed to be the best national league in Europe by 2020. There's still some time for us, and we probably will need that time. I think we are very much on track. We'll definitely have a budget record of the league and of the clubs next season. We will have probably a spectator record next season as well. And we have a completely new TV situation, the best TV situation for the last, I don't know, 25 years probably, with two free TV partners, one Sport 1 as a sports channel and the other one Cable 1, really Kabel 1 really a big big TV station with an average of 6% of the people watching Kabel 1. This is a big success for us and a big opportunity to broadcast our product, to show Biko BBL to more people. So in a nutshell, I think we are very much on track, and what we of course lack, and the big clubs know that, is the European success. This has to come too, because that's a relevant part of the overall picture to assess, are we the best national league in Europe, yes or no?
For our listeners out there, maybe just talk a little bit about how this television contract compares to maybe a couple other nations.
Oh well, I'm actually not an expert on other nations' TV contracts. I know that in some countries the TV stations paid a lot of money in the past, and that the leagues were very present. Our problem was always that the German television market is one of the hardest to understand in the world, and one of the tightest TV market, especially for sports that are not soccer. And this is why it's a big success to have two free TV partners. We always had only one free TV partner that was a sports channel with a limited audience, and now we have one of the big TV stations. So this is the big opportunity, actually, not only a budget surplus, but the best opportunity to show it to more people. This is very important for us.
It would seem that one of the keys to having international success is to get top-level players to come in. The German teams have kind of gotten more and more of that now. You have some big names like Bastian Nachbar with Bamberg and Joachim Halperin with Bayern Munich, and even a young top talent like Nenad Tedovic in Berlin. A lot of teams have really improved their rosters this year, and it promises a very balanced league this year, a very competitive league. Talk about maybe what your thoughts are on in the league, that the next level of players, that the clubs are able to bring in the next level of players.
This is not a surprise, but a great joy that those players are now in our league, and I hope it's a good sign for other players to follow them. 5 years ago, this wouldn't have been possible, and this is due to the hard and good work of the big clubs, especially, that we've come to that stage. And this is really very important for us, because these are really stars that lacked our league in the past years. And I think apart from the reason that in Germany you get your money, you get paid, that was a reason for players to come to Germany for recent years already. Now the budgets are so substantial, we've doubled the budgets in the last 5 years, that it's become more and more attractive, economically speaking, to play in Germany too. And the last reason, I think, is that they all know that those clubs like Bayern, like Rose Baskets, like Alba, and like Ulm and Oldenburg as well, that they all strive for a bigger importance, for a bigger budget, for more spectators, that they are ambitious to be bigger clubs in the European context. This is what makes it, I think, attractive for many players.
Obviously, you had a little bit of an eye on the European Championship qualifiers. Your thoughts on seeing so many of the young BBL stars qualify so confidently and so dominantly, eight victories in eight games to qualify for Eurobasket. Your thoughts of that on that from a league's point of view?
It was a great joy to see those players, our players, to play so fresh and so ambitious and so so good together, so well together. And it was great to see Svetislav Pesic coaching them in his very special way of giving them a lot of pressure, but giving them a lot of freedom at the same time. This is, I think, a big generation that is developing there, and it's good to have them in our league. And I hope that all of them will play the substantial role they see for themselves in the next season. Something that wasn't true in recent years either.
Okay, the big question, and as the CEO of the BBL, who's going to win the championship?
This is the one question that brings me in danger. This is why I avoid it. But of course, when you see the Borussia Basket roster, when you see the Bayern roster, and when you see what Alba Berlin did, they all want to become champion. And there are some others like what Ulm did last season, and so I think we will have the stable competition we spoke about earlier, and I'm very happy to see a fifth final game sometime in June.
All right, look forward to it as well. Thanks. Okay, well, that was Jan Palmer being very diplomatic. How about that, huh, Oz?
Well, like I said, I've been following the elections pretty closely, and wow, kind of sounded like a stump speech. Kind of sounded very politic was the adjective I was going to use. But you know, that's a EuroLeague official. That's a FIBA official. I mean, we got to put a smile on things. We got to put a nice picture on things. To be fair,
I just to defend Jan Palmer on this, I think that over the last 5-6 years or whatever that he's been there, he really gets it. He really understands what it's all about, and what needs to be done. You know, some of the things that he's helped implement have really taken, and we'll address this again, with the 2020 part, but he's definitely somebody that has played a huge role in Germany's rise. And the fact that he got on the board, I don't think that's any surprise. I mean he was really the restrictions that the Germans league put in. I think that when the EuroLeague said maybe this is something that we should do as well, I think it was pretty clear right from the bat that they should go in and get this guy. I mean, he's a very 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 intelligent guy who really understands it. So
I was gonna say, just to be fair, I mean, I remember when I started with Ball in Europe 6 years ago, as opposed to now. I mean, back then, Jesus, the marketing was 19th century. Now, Palmer has really established that brand, really established the product. In a lot of countries in Europe, EuroLeague is on the TV alongside the NBA. These are awesome moves. And of course, in Germany, I can't say enough about what he's done in Germany. I mean, Germany is poised to, I don't know if they're going to live quite up to the 2020 expectation, but that's a high profile league by the end of the decade. No question about it.
So he talked about the financial fair play, and this is just a quick recap. It's basically it's similar to what the UEFA did in the European Soccer Football League, basically that the clubs had to run their teams, clubs, financially responsible. I mean, you can only spend what you bring in, and this financial fair play board is then there to look at the data, at the information, at the balance books, and say okay, and then to judge and say okay, well, this is you guys are doing or not, and then to hand out penalties. Those penalties won't happen yet. This is the first season that it's come onto the books. Mm-hmm. And this is basically, I think it's 2 or 3 years where they're going to look at where the teams have there's a build up to it, and that the teams actually have a chance to, the clubs have a chance to get into to balance their books, to get into the situation where they need to be. But this is the first season then that over the course of the season, and then much more intensively after the season, that this EuroLeague board will go in and say, and really look at the books and criticize them and figure out what, and analyze them and figure out what kind of needs to be done. So
okay, we shall see. As soon as this thing came out, as soon as they started whispering about this, my first thought was, okay, this is all about that thing that, European NGOs and companies are so obsessed about these days, which is transparency. Okay, well, that's what they want. They want transparency. They don't want this squirrely stuff where you're not quite sure how much this guy is supposed to be making. We're not quite sure who's doing your advertising, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's what they don't want. Now, what I'm concerned about and what I'm going to be watching for when these assessments go down, and this was the first point I wanted to bring up, is, okay, how transparent is EuroLeague going to be? You know, how much are they going to share with their stakeholders? Another great obsession in European NGOs. You know, how are they going to, you know, show the results? Are they going to announce the penalties and why they gave them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? I also wonder if, okay, you can't argue that transparency is bad necessarily, okay? But I also wonder, you know, this fair play name is a bit squirrely in itself. I mean, what do they mean? In right after the season, so probably in like late May, early June, there were rumors, you know, about the CSKA Moscow budget for next year. And it is insane. Okay, we were getting numbers as high as 44 million euros, total operating budget. Okay, in any case, by any number, they're increasing their budget by 31%. Now, even if they make a profit, even if they don't destroy their infrastructure along the way for the, you know, one-year title, is that fair? You know, is that fair to even a German team who doesn't have that kind of budget? I mean, is that fair play?
Well, that's exactly what they're trying, that they're over the long term trying to avoid. I mean, it's also in the EuroLeague's interest to, you know, I mean, you want to have the competition be, you know, fair. I mean, you know, you could see it in Germany, you could see it in Spain. I mean, if you have a balanced competition, your games are going to be more excited. There's going to be more interest because you actually have more people who think that, yeah, maybe we can win this game. Maybe we can win this title, you know? I mean, you go into last season, who had a chance to win the title? I mean, it was CSKA Moscow and Panathinaikos and, you know.
Barcelona, of course.
Yeah. I mean, there was like two.
But
three,
who
has
a chance going in this year? Who has a chance going in this year? Look.
All right. But who has a chance to win in 3 years?
Well, you know? Okay.
And it's not going to change this year. It's not going to change next year. It's probably not going to change the year after that. But it's the start of something, and I think one thing that we also need to look at is what happens in the UEFA. You know, what happens with the Real Madrid, what happens to the Chelseas and the Manchester Cities, and you know, what happens with those clubs, and what kind of penalties do they get, and then what EuroLeague says to those, you know, what they, we're gonna say, well, you know, I mean, you have to make it at least. I mean, you have to make a pretty solid penalty because otherwise nobody's going to follow it. So,
but look at this. Look at this. I was reading something from the BBC. This came out in April, and they were doing an assessment, you know, saying that 1 out of 5 clubs in England is in poor financial shape, whatnot. Okay. They also said that Real Madrid football team is entering this year with 255 million euro debt. Okay, but UEFA is going to overlook that because they believe that they can generate that much money. Now, like Palmer said in the interview, and this was another point I wanted to touch on, what he said in the interview is, quote, just like in soccer, there are many issues we have to face. Mm-hmm. Okay, now if they're going to approach this situation in the same way, that means that, yeah, you're going to have your top four, your top five for a long time. I think that's what that implies, because they would be willing to excuse this massive CSKA Moscow budget, this $50 million, 45 million euro budget. You know, they'll be willing to excuse that because they think that they can make that money back. But I, you know, I worry again, you worry about the lower tier, you worry about a KK Zagreb, you know, these Croatian teams that are hemorrhaging money. You worry about this stuff. One of the interesting things that, Palmer touched on with regard to Germany is that he said, look, the nice thing about the German league is in Germany, you get your money, quote unquote. quote unquote, the players get paid, he says. And that's the thing. So you're always, if fair play doesn't induce some kind of budget leveling system, you're always going to have this movement to Czech, Moscow, Barcelona, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, just like in football. Now, if you want to live with that, that's fine. I mean, I am also of the mentality that dynasties are good for sports. I think it's good to have that Darth Vader figure. I think it's good to have that measuring stick for the decade or for the five-year span or whatever. I think that's a good thing, but most people would argue against that, especially in Europe, where it's all about development. It's all about giving Alba Berlin a shot.
But do you... Albert, we could talk about Albert Berlin.
Well, for example.
I know. No, but do you think that this means the end of dynasties like Panathinaikos and Barcelona and Real Madrid and CSKA Moscow?
Panathinaikos is in a special situation. I don't know. See, I don't know what fair play is going to do about these massive disparities in budget. It's bizarre. I was thinking about this. It's bizarre that in the States, they have stuff like revenue sharing. They have stuff like, you know, despite the fact that they advertise these teams as separate franchises, separate businesses, right? They still do revenue sharing. They still agree on salary caps in some sports. But these are like European socialist ideas. Mm-hmm. And then here you have in Europe where it's like they're throwing everybody in and saying, okay, go for it. You know, you're from a poor country. You're from a middle class country. Too bad. You know, I feel like that's the case in Europe. It's even more hyper-capitalistic than American sport. You know, now, again, we'll see if financial fair play is the European answer to stuff like salary cap, to stuff like revenue sharing. But, you know, I got to be skeptical about it, at least for the time being.
As the skeptic, no. Development Dave, yeah. and the ever optimistic Dave. In that regard, what did you think about he said that the impression that he had was that it's not as bad as we thought.
Great. This was the third point I wanted to touch on, the third and final point. The quote I got is, it's not as bad as it could have been. Most clubs are pretty stable.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, this goes back to the transparency issue. Okay, I want to know, how bad could it have been? I want to know, how bad is it? You know, I want to know, okay, which clubs are not pretty stable? You know, I mean, honestly, this is the kind of stuff that I would like transparent. Now, okay, a lot of major sports leagues don't really give out this information, but I think that in some countries in Europe, where basketball is a number two or a number three sport, that the situation could be considered more critical than like Real Madrid running up a 200 million euro debt. You know, I mean, when you talk about the future of clubs like Cibona Zagreb, you know, this is a team that's been around since the 20s in a fantastic basketball culture. You know, these guys are silver medal Olympic winners, you know. When you talk about basketball dimming there, when you talk about the lure of basketball going down there, I mean, that's not a positive thing. You know, that's not a positive thing. And if that's the case, you know, it's like the public needs to know. And again, going with the political riff, the public needs to know. I mean, we want to know which clubs are not stable. We want to know this kind of stuff. I'm glad that he says it's not as bad as it could have been. You know, and by all appearances, you know, it seems that some of these teams, some of these clubs in countries where the situation is not the best, Montenegro, for example, let's say, are still performing okay economically and on the court. But, you know, I worry when I hear stuff like most clubs are pretty stable. And I worry. And then what's the greater picture? What's the greater picture beyond EuroLeague? Okay, is it like in Europe where they estimate one out of five clubs is having financial solvency problems? You know, I mean, I would like to know that. Is that really the case? Is it that bad in, for example, France? You know, This is the stuff I would like to know, rather than we're trying to develop basketball in Germany, England. You know, I think this is a more pressing issue.
Yeah. Well, we'll try to get some people on to maybe address some of those issues. I think it's important that the issues are addressed. I think it's important that mm-hmm. people, you know, try to. I kind of wonder how many people are really interested in the financial fair play at all.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But it's something that really interests me, and I think it's something that has a huge. That can have a huge impact on the game, and so I think it's something that we should and we will talk about.
Well, look, you can perfectly enjoy basketball without knowing most of the financial stuff. Yeah. Okay, just like you can perfectly enjoy this podcast without listening to this segment. But you know, for those who enjoy that voodoo, I encourage people to watch this fair play. Watch any development in this. Watch any announcement regarding this. Watch any announcement regarding budget and like economic shortfalls of top European clubs. I mean, in any case, we can now, I guess, come away from this voodoo and move on to Germany and lavish praise on this outstanding, interesting league, if you would like, Dave.
Yeah, they're getting there.
Should we move on?
Let's move on. Sure.
Okay.
You go for it. Go for it.
Okay. Palmer says, you know, Germany is on track. Now, by on track, he's referring to the. Is it officially called the 2020 plan?
They have an official press release and all that, and it's on their website saying that they for 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. The goal is to become the top domestic league in Europe. By 2020, in terms of what finances and level of talent,
and performance,
and yes, like that. I think Palmer's slightly optimistic. 2020 is actually scarily close. I mean, it's only 8 years from now. It's only a couple of Olympics from now. Number one in 8 years. That's tough, but wow, what an interesting league. What an interesting. Development going on there, just everywhere. Dave, you brought up the point in the interview that perhaps the league has some of its highest profile players ever this year coming in: Bastian Nachbar to Bamberg, Yotam Alperin to Bayern Munich, and Nihad Dedovic, the underrated, I would say, Nihad Dedovic to Alba Berlin in a nice under the radar transaction, stealing him from Galatasaray. That was a nice move by them. So things are looking really nice in the German domestic league. Now, I know that most European basketball fans aren't accustomed to watching the German league, but geez, I know you would recommend it. I would recommend it, especially during the playoffs when things really get wild in Germany traditionally. Last year, not so much, but in the past.
Yeah,
and so...
Yeah, this 2020 goal... You know, it's something that they've had there now for a couple of years, and you know, the German league just signed a new television contract to get it on, like he was saying, two free TV channels, and this Kabel Eins channel that he that he was talking about, they are, I think that the fact that Bayern Munich is there helped them get this part of it, because they've already said, Kabel One now has said that they are going to show 10 Bayern Munich games. So there was clearly the interest of getting more Bayern Munich on television. I mean from the television standpoint.
Has there been anything in European sports like the Bayern Munich basketball program resurrection? Anything? I mean, it's been success after success after success for that team. And the league has been able to leverage the marketing of that brand name marvelously. Absolutely incredible.
I've been in Europe for about 15 years now, and I don't know of anything close to it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just
in any sport, in any sport, you know.
Yeah, I mean, just this run of success, and I mean, just the successful capitalization on, you know, this fantastic internationally known brand name, and just, you know, and the play. I mean, it's been a good team. You know, they've gotten some boosts. You know, they were put into the Euro Cup, I believe, way too quickly, but. You know, they were passable in that league. They've been playing well in Germany. I mean, wow. Just success after success after success. And it's only been, like, what, 2-3 years?
They started in Pro A with the head coach Dirk Bauman two mm-hmm. seasons ago. This is their third season. They won the second division, the Pro A, two seasons ago, and then finished I want to say fifth or sixth.
Consider that in 2 years, these guys are now entered into any discussion about German basketball, along with, you know, Frankfurt and Alba Berlin and all these traditional powers. In 2 years,
I mean, they are a serious title candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you went from the second division. To a very serious title candidate within that time frame. I mean, that just shows you. And then also changed their stadium. They were playing in a small 3,500, mm-hmm. You know, former ice hockey, or it's actually an ice hockey hall, gym, arena type thing. And now they're playing at the old Rudy Sedlmayr Halle, where they had the 1972 Olympics. Nice big old Audi Dome, you know, commercialization of it, you know, and they did the renovation of it, and it looks really good. I mean, and it can be their home for, you know, the next, you know, 3-4 years, and then if it's still booming, they can go in and get something bigger. It's about like 6,500 fans, so.
Okay, here's another one for your development, Dave. How come, with all of these, like, recent documentaries about basketball and economic issues, whether they're personal or not, how come, where's the movie on the Bayern Munich basketball team? Is somebody shooting this thing and they're just going to wait until they make the EuroLeague or they make the Final Four in Germany or what? I mean, this is a tremendous story. I mean, I don't understand building this thing from almost nothing to where it is now. Where is the movie?
I think Germany's waiting for you to come here and and film it
and look at 2 years worth of footage and catch up and brush up on my German.
I'll be there for the German. Don't worry about your German.
You'll be there for me, Dave.
Yes. it's a great story. And there's also the hate element. There's the love-hate element to it as well. I mean, you have Bayern Munich, which is, you know, soccer or football-wise, you know, such a hated, loved club, and you have that same exact thing at the basketball level, which adds the whole dynamic to that as well.
Well, it's like I said, it's good to have a Darth Vader. Yeah, it's good to have a bad guy. And plus, you know, Dave, it's European ball. Every team has a love-hate relationship. You love your club, you hate everybody else.
No,
period.
But this I think is on a little bit bigger level, though. I mean,
yeah,
club in Germany. You know, looking at soccer, football, and that's the one club in Germany where everybody just hates. You know, I mean, there's clubs that, you know, I don't like them that much or whatever. You have your derby teams and stuff like that, but. You know, that this goes beyond just regional thing. You know, this is the entire nation.
Yeah.
You know,
I know what you mean. Yeah, it's universal. It's a symbol. It's a jersey that you burn in effigy.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a huge boost. It was a huge boost, and I think the league was going bonkers when they you know, heard that they were going to start it, and then that they went and did it, and that it's also become what it has become and what everybody thought that it would be. I think one of the things that they really need to do is they need to they'll get the top level talent, and that's not a problem, and they'll have the money for that, and but they need to do a lot of work infrastructure wise and they also need to do a lot of work at the youth level. I mean, there's a lot of youth development restrictions, requirements in Germany that you have to have, and all of that had to be more or less built up from scratch. And so they're gonna, you know, they really have to bring in a lot more people to improve the infrastructure of that club.
Yeah, on the one hand, that's the bugaboo, and this is one that a lot of teams with the financial problems have been, you know, unfortunately avoiding. On the plus side, Bowerman, right? I mean, you've got the head of the national team. He's had his fingers in the national program pie for years. I mean, you know, that's a pretty good guy to head up a youth development program.
Well, I think probably the bigger guy right now is in that regard, Marko Pezic, Svetislav Pezic's son, former German international. He's their sporting director, so he's their player personnel guy. You know, he goes out and gets the players, and he also, he also works on helping develop their youth program, and I think he's just as important. And I mean, he also
he didn't get an all-star team in the front office. It's just not fair.
yeah, exactly. So.
Well, good for them. I mean, you know, it's like they're the successful bad guy in wrestling. You know, it's like they've milked that bad boy reputation, like the Oakland Raiders or whatever, to their success. I mean, that would definitely have to be part of the documentary. It's just the jeering crowds in the first year of their play. You know, it's just incredible. I mean,
but I think the German league is definitely on a good path for sure. I mean, whether or not they can do it really depends on whether or not they have success. I mean, you had Göttingen win the Euro Challenge 2010. You had Albert Berlin go pretty far in the Euro Cup last year. Or was it the year before? But you need to have that success at the EuroLeague level. I mean, Bamberg was so close the last 2 years, and they're just burning so hard to get into that last 16, that top 16. I mean, they deserve to be in there the last 2 years, and it's just they didn't make it. And I think that adds a whole different level. If you have that success.
I like that. And really, for me, the great thing about Germany is that they've managed to, and you're a witness to this, they've managed to sell the product at home. Okay, now you have your countries like Spain, Greece, Lithuania, Turkey. You know, they'll watch the local league, but in countries like France, Italy, it's a challenge. It's a challenge to get these games on TV. And I am certain that 15, 20 years ago in Germany, far fewer people cared about the domestic league than they do now. Far fewer. And this is really one of the underrated successes of the Bundesliga program right now. You know, this is really one of Palmer's triumphs, is that, you know, it sells in Germany, you know. A football crazy country, but still, you know, the local league sells. Bravo, nice work, Mr. Palmer, on that.
Yep. Well, let's leave Germany alone for a while again. So that's pretty much what we got for you guys for this time around. Why don't we? Oz, why don't you maybe talk a little bit about what you're working on maybe next week, over the next week?
Well, let's see. For our next podcast, we're going to do the movie, right?
Yep, we're going to...
Okay. Running right now on Ball in Europe in this somewhat slow period of basketball is a review on a must-see movie, The Iran Job. Now, I believe that you can order the DVD from their website. It's sort of a limited release thing. It's debuting in Los Angeles next week, New York in October. Don't know about Europe yet. We definitely have to ask when it's coming here, especially to Serbia. I encourage everybody not just to read the review, but to check out the movie, check out the trailer, everything like that. Other than that, it's business as usual at Ball in Europe. We're covering everything. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. I'm actually taking a wanted / unwanted break from basketball this weekend. The World Baseball Classic qualifiers are taking place here in Regensburg, Germany, and I will be covering that for a couple different outlets, and actually looking forward to that. The one team will then qualify for the World Baseball Classic. I know this is a basketball podcast and nobody, you know, really necessarily cares about it, but just as far as I'm doing, it pains me to do the tournament in one regard, that there's two unbelievably delicious preseason tournaments taking place in Germany this weekend. There's the Beko BBL, the Beko Leagues Cup, I think is what it's called, in Munich, and that's with Bayern Munich, Besiktas, CSKA Moscow, and Žalgiris, Kaunas. And then there's
one of the Lithuanians. Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah, it's Kaunas. And then the other one is the Dome Rider Cup, which is taking place in Nuremberg at a small place, a small little, really almost high school gym-esque type facility in Nuremberg, with Bros Baskets Bamberg, and then Kimki, Olympiakos, and Maccabi Tel Aviv. So
it'll be really great to see the new-ish look CSKA Moscow. Again, nice roster there. It'll be nice to see them, or in your case, not see them.
I'll see them. I'll see them when they come to Bamberg for the EuroLeague.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Because I'm talking about first look.
I know. So that's
when... But if you're a sports fan in general, World Baseball Classic qualifiers this weekend. If you're into sports, check this out. This is a great underplayed event because America doesn't take it so seriously, I think. However, it is a great event.
Yeah.
And I'm very jealous of Dave for getting to go.
Yeah, and I'll be jealous kind of the people...
who get to see the tournament?
Who get to see the tournament? No, I mean, you know, if CSKA Moscow, you know, and if there wasn't Bamberg that I would be going to the EuroLeague games, then I would maybe consider, but you know,
development, Dave, forget about your volunteer work for FIBA and EuroLeague, and just, you know, work on that easy cloning machine.
Yeah, that's actually. Yeah,
then you can cover everything.
Then I can cover everything. See it all. No, but if you're anywhere near Germany, near Bavaria, both of those tournaments are in southern Germany and Bavaria, Nuremberg and Munich. If you're here, if you're in northern, northern Austria or Switzerland or, you know, Croatia or whatever. You know, Luis in Portugal, I know that's kind of far to come, but definitely if you're here, definitely come check it out. So that's what we got going on. We'll podcast next week. We'll be talking to some of the protagonists regarding that movie that Oz was telling you about, the Iran job. We both had a chance to actually see it. And it's a very, 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 very good movie. I hope that people can get a chance to go out and see it. I'm also trying to get copies of it that we can actually do a giveaway on. More on that hopefully soon. I guess we'll say goodbye now. Oz, why don't you tell the people how the wonderful people out there, how they can get a hold of you and how they can follow you.
Okay, the website is ballineurope.com. Post pretty much every day. Twitter feed is BIE_basketball. And I believe that the Facebook page is just Ball in Europe. Thanks for listening. As we say in Hungary, Viszont Latásra.
Okay. And for me, it's the Twitter feed is Hein News, and then the website is HeinNews.com, And we also have a we're just starting up a Facebook group for the podcast, Taking the Charge. Just put in Taking the Charge in Facebook, and you should come into the group, or you should find the group, and then just ask for an invite, and of course, Oz and I will let you in,
Probably.
I think we'll probably let you in, and
even if you're not from Portugal,
or from Montenegro, you know, we love our fans there, but I think we love our fans everywhere, and also not just in Europe. I mean, if you catch on to this podcast somewhere not in Europe, we like talking to basketball anywhere, and
play great ball here in Europe. Play great ball.
And we will talk about basketball outside of Europe. I mean, this is we're just starting this thing, and we're not just gonna keep our little podcast to ourselves here in Europe. I mean, we're also gonna talk about basketball.
Next week we're gonna talk about Asian ball.
There you go. Well, on that regard, Oz, it's been fun.
Thank you, sir.
We will chat again next week. Again, people, feel free to contact us, highnews.com, ballineurope.com, and there's contact information on both of those sites. Highnews@gmx.de is my email. Oz, your email?
Email would be ballineurope@yahoo.com.
Feel free to send us emails. We love your emails. We love to hear from you, and we'll catch you next week. Oz, it's been a pleasure.
See ya. Thank you.
I've been working and sweating so long.